You are listening to KHUHLP 104.9 FM, Seattle. Here at the Thunderbolt, I tend to cover a lot of controversial topics from controversial points of view. And therefore, some of the other folks that work with Hollow Earth Radio always appreciate it when I point out that while they may agree with the views expressed on this program, they also very well may not. And in either case, they are in no way responsible for that content. Therefore, if my show makes you want to start hurling blunt objects at people, then make sure you choose the correct target, which in this case would be me, not them. And now, on with the show! Yes, kids, there you were, enjoying your privileged white status, blissfully ignorant of the fact that your shoes were manufactured by a child slave, until one day, you turned on your radio, and you were struck by the Thunderbolt! Hello, Cascadia! It's time to wake up! Yes, you better grab that cup of coffee, because you are about to be struck by the thunderbolt of truth and justice. Here it comes. Yes, kids. The thunderbolt is your guide to activism in Thurston County. I have news. I have commentary, I have a calendar for activist-related events, kick-ass music, and dumb jokes! So Cascadia is off of the couch and into the streets! It's time to save civilization from fiery apocalypse! Though even the apocalypse is gonna have to wait until I have had a cup of coffee! Hello, people. Welcome to the Thunderbolt for September 3rd, 2021. So, our patriarchal society is often justly criticized for overemphasizing the importance of the male penis. Men's fascination with and reverence for their male parts is pretty much apocryphal throughout history, in fact. Well, in Iceland, they have the phallic symbol to be all phallic symbols. And that Iceland literally has an entire museum that is dedicated solely to penises. Any, all, and only penises. It was founded by Sig Hjartsson, who as a child had used a pizzle, or the penis bone of a bull, as a whip to herd animals. Later, some of Mr. Hjartsson's whaling friends, knowing of this history, started bringing him giant whale penises as a joke. And so, Mr. Hjartsson decided to own it, and he started collecting penises as a hobby, with a result that is best described by Mr. Hjartsson's wife, who said, quote, "More and more penises kept coming into the house. And then, it just got out of control." Unquote. So, the modern museum contains preserved specimens from nearly every mammal in the Northern Hemisphere, as well as numerous art pictures featuring phallic themes, such as paintings, wood carvings, and sculptures. There is cutlery with penises for handles. There's a salt and pepper shaker that you hold by the penis and then tilt right to shake salt out of the right testicle, and then tilt left to shake pepper out of the left testicle. There's a giant phallus-shaped full-on mini bar that opens up to display a full bottle of liquor, shakers, shot glasses, stirrers, and everything else that you need for drinks on the go. And as for the collection of actual penises, the Icelandic Phallological Museum contains a collection of more than 200 penises and penile parts belonging to almost all of the land and sea mammals that can be found in Iceland. They range from some of the largest to some of the smallest penises in the animal world. Its largest exhibit is a portion of a blue whale's penis, measuring 67 inches long and weighing 150 pounds, which the Iceland Review dubbed as a real Moby Dick, unquote. The smallest item in the collection is the baculum of a hamster, which at only 0.08 inches long requires a magnifying glass to actually see it, which the museum conveniently provides. The museum also claims that its collection includes the penises of both elves and trolls. As is told in Icelandic folklore, though, such creatures are invisible and thus their penises cannot be seen by human eyes. Yes, the Icelandic Phallological Museum has specimens from nearly every known mammal in the North Atlantic except Homo sapiens, and thus developed a competition to donate the first human penis to the Icelandic Phallological Museum. On one side was the local favorite, Paul Arason, one of Iceland's richest men and a man who claims to have had sex with more Icelandic women than any other man in history. In fact, he carried a notebook with over 300 names in it. Competing with Mr. Arason was, of course, an American. His name was Tom Mitchell, and Mr. Mitchell had named his penis Elmo. And Mr. Mitchell's most fervent dream was to make Elmo into the most famous penis in the whole world. Mr. Arason was favored to win the contest, as he was very elderly, whereas Mr. Mitchell was still middle-aged. But evidently, Mr. Mitchell was so anxious for Elmo to go down in history that he seriously considered having Elmo detached before Mr. Mitchell himself actually died, thus assuring Elmo's ascendance to becoming the first human penis ever to be displayed in a museum. And Mr. Mitchell explained, that he was not making this sacrifice for himself, but for the legacy of Elmo. Mr. Mitchell even had a Stars and Stripes tattooed upon his foreskin in anticipation of his eventual place of honor in the Icelandic Zoological Museum's collection. I have always had a dream of fame and fortune for Elmo, Mitchell says. Mitchell also pointed out that his penis was 7 inches in length, whilst Mr. Harrison's was only 5 inches. So the curator of the museum, Mr. Hjartson, told reporters, "We would be happy to receive his penis," adding that Mitchell has said he thought that it would be, quote, funny, unquote, to be able to visit his own penis in a museum. I guess that's one word for it. And then finally, just as everyone was praying that someone would please donate a penis to this dude so we could finally get to know how all of this ends, Paul Harrison finally died peacefully at age 93. And his penis now graces the exhibition hall of the Icelandic Zoological Museum as the first human penis in their collection. Congratulations, Mr. Harrison. I think. Occasionally, just to break the never-ceasing doom and gloom that seems to permeate our world these days, I like to report on good news and hopeful developments. For instance, there is the fact that most people are good people. Most people would be outraged to their cores if they knew what was really going on, and then such things would no longer be allowed. And that is why I dedicate myself to spreading the kind of information that I share on this program. There are also other signs that the American people are starting to get it. Cockroaches now enjoy a higher approval rating than Congress does, for instance. Congress now has a lower approval rating even than France. How can they face their constituents knowing that? However, we do still have some work to do, since Congress does still have a higher approval rating than gonorrhea. So let's see what we can do about that, eh, people? Now, back to our regular programming. Now, you may remember a few years back when I repeatedly and forcefully warned listeners that the sarin gas attacks in Syria were almost certainly false flag operations, and that they were most likely at least organized, if not carried out, by Western intelligence services. Well, new evidence has emerged proving that I got that at least half right. And while this new information sheds no new light on the other half of my contention, it does not deny nor disprove it either. Yes, people, this new evidence indicates that these attacks were actually carried out by an anti-government Syrian insurgent group called Liwa al-Islam. And while the new evidence does not reveal anything about how Liwa al-Islam funded their operation, I wouldn't be surprised at all if rogue elements amongst certain American intelligence agencies and or Israeli intelligence agencies were shoving a lot of aid out the back door. Anyway, after Barack Obama issued his now infamous red line speech, wherein he promised military intervention if the Syrian government ever resorted to using chemical weapons to suppress dissent, Liwa al-Islam evidently decided to launch the gas attack with the aim of framing the Syrian government and thus triggering Obama's promised American military response. In other words, they believed a Barack Obama promise. Well, I could have warned them about doing that, but they probably would not have listened to me anyway. So whatever. When are people gonna figure out that you can't believe a word these guys say? Another thing I have been repeatedly warning you about, and plan to continue warning you about, is the fact that the freaking oppression machine wants not only to eliminate all opposition to their agenda, but they want to completely eliminate even the very ability to oppose their agenda. And in that context, COVID-19 has turned into an unbelievable bonanza for authoritarians the world over. Yes, people, not since World War I has there been such a golden opportunity for totalitarian power monsters to consolidate their fiefdoms. And I am hereby officially predicting that unless everyone gets off their asses and starts taking some serious measures, then our world will soon be completely and utterly dominated by psychopathic and criminal global elites who are now using the COVID pandemic to fast-track all of their evil plots. And these plots have been unfolding for many decades now, but they are built upon centuries of steady and relentless consolidation of elitist power. And those powers are about to achieve capabilities that their predecessors could have only dreamed of. For you see, computerized technologies are depriving us of what little we had left of our financial autonomy and any notion of personal privacy is rapidly vanishing. The digitization of money has been occurring for decades and is now being accelerated dramatically. The global financial system is currently being re-engineered to play its role in seizing complete control and complete dominance of everything from everyone. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, several UN agencies, and many national governments and corporations, such as MasterCard and Visa, are all actively and aggressively pushing to create a cashless society and to conduct all financial transactions online. According to Global Research News, the convenience of cards and apps has two significant costs: your privacy and your freedom. You lose both simply because while paying with cash is anonymous, paying by card or app leaves a digital trail that is as difficult to follow as an elephant whose tail you are already holding. And this digital trail forms a vital part of the surveillance grid that enables all of those who are tracking and documenting your movement, your payments, and your behavior, and to do so without leaving the comfort of their chairs. Unquote. There is a related push by some World Economic Forum partners to, quote, tackle cybercrime, basically by ending all privacy and any potential for anonymity on the internet. And they plan to do this by the simple expedient of linking government-issued IDs to internet access. And such a policy would allow the government to conduct surveillance on every piece of online content access, as well as every post or comment authored by each and every citizen. They are supposedly doing all of this to ensure that no citizen can engage in, quote, criminal activity online. But then what they will do is change all of the laws to criminalize any behavior that they don't like.
I'm fading backwards. I'm backwards.
At the same time, they make their own criminal activities 100% opaque to the rest of us. And they fully intend to eventually force us to accept digital methods as the only means of payment for everything, because then nothing is secret except everything that they themselves do. Yes, they want to kill cash because cash undermines the elitist agenda to take all power from ordinary people, and killing cash would actually be quite easy. All they would need to do is to remove all ATMs and forbid banks from dealing in cash. Actual money would simply become unavailable. This is already happening in many other parts of the world. In addition, there have been warnings from various institutions including the World Economic Forum and the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, about the possibility of, quote, an allegedly imminent cyber attack that will collapse the existing financial system, unquote. In other words, they plan to intentionally crash the economy. And they intend to do that because their proposed solution is, quote, to unite the national security apparatus and the financial industry first, and then use that as a model to do the same with other sectors of the economy. Yes, people, that's out of the horse's mouth. Yes, I'm telling you, this is the totalitarian's wet dream, in other words. They're going to put everything under one roof. Yes, you're one-stop shop. And effect does not profoundly scare the crap out of you, then you don't understand. Time for a station break now, but don't worry, I'll find you. See you in a minute. The views expressed on this program are strictly those of the show's producers and do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station nor anyone associated with this radio station. And now, back to the Thunderbolt. So picture this. You're a guy on a first date with a girl that you would really like to impress. Then some bullies insult your date, whereupon you stand up for her honor and start beating up the bullies, causing them to run away. For some, I guess that would be a dream date. Well, guess what? You can arrange to make that happen. Yes, people, here's your golden opportunity to be a fake hero for a price. Just make your way to Hirakata Park in Osaka, Japan.
Why does the gay little dicky bird sing? What puts the zing in a butterfly's wing? What's the reason for the smile of a troubadour? Why does the breeze have a barrel of fun? Even the bee who's a son of a gun. It's all because they're free and stringless, the same as me. I've got no strings.
And you can pay bullies there to insult your date and then have them pretend to lose a fight with you before they run away.
I owe the merry old.
Your fee includes a class on how to believably throw a fake punch. That's not all. If you're the non-violent type, you can instead arrange to defuse a fake bomb and save everyone around you. Or you can just happen to encounter someone who desperately needs a blood transfusion, and you are the only one who can save him or her. Well, gee, everything else in our culture has become fake. So why not cash in on the phenomenon? All right, welcome back to the Thunderbolt. So I ended part one of this week's show on a pretty down note. And so I would like now to provide some sage advice, courtesy of Robert J. Burroughs, upon how to effectively resist this agenda. Quote, while virtually all people believe that elite agents, in this case governments, are controlling events, much resistance will focus upon begging these same governments through such things as petitions and protest demonstrations to fix it for us. The elite has long dissipated our dissent by having us directed at one or other of its own agents. In this case is no different. And when we are not using our occasional large rallies to inform people how to resist powerfully every day of their life, these rallies are otherwise a waste of time. Whatever solidarity they build in the short term, and history is categorically instructive on that point. It is important, therefore, that those of us who are aware of the deeper agenda continue to provide opportunities for others to become aware of this too, and the fundamental threat it poses to us all, while also sharing how we can resist its key dimensions in a way that actually makes a difference. It is not enough to complain about elite agents, such as governments, and the medical, and the pharmaceutical industries, or the corporate media. We must strategically resist the elite coup itself before we find ourselves locked into a technocratic prison without the free-willed minds necessary to analyze, critique, plan, and to act. We're not going to get anything begging for crumbs from our oppressors. So humans are a very yin and yang kind of species. On the one hand, we can boast amazing feats of near miraculous achievement. Beethoven not only wrote a symphony when he was stone deaf, but he wrote friggin' Beethoven's friggin' ninth symphony when he was stone friggin' deaf. Sequoia was an illiterate Cherokee Indian who did not even speak English, much less write it. Yet Sequoia sat down and invented a rendered version of the Cherokee language that in most metrics is now considered to be superior to every other known written language on Earth. Sequoia was also very clear that his syllabary was a weapon to counter the white man's advantage that a written language provided. Sequoia's syllabary eventually had even international influence, as it is believed to have inspired the development of 21 known scripts or writing systems, and that it has been used in a total of 65 languages that are spoken everywhere from North America to Africa to Asia. So things like this make me think that humans might have some serious mojo going on here. On the other hand, though, the fact that people can even want to watch a cockfight, much less that cockfighting enthusiasts tend to be very enthusiastic about this obscene display of butchery and savagery. Well, things like that make me think that perhaps humanity deserves to go extinct. Beethoven, after all, was reportedly a rude, foul-mouthed, drunken white beater who never bathed. And sadly, it's not just us. Sometime recently, I joked that maybe humans should devolve back into apes. Well, maybe that wasn't such a hot idea after all, because in Thailand, the local monkey population is starving due to a sharp reduction in their natural food source, which is foreign tourists. And in response, hundreds of monkeys have begun clashing in huge gang wars that are causing massive traffic jams on the streets of Lop Buri, a city in northeastern Thailand. Oh well, maybe humanity will eventually evolve into small furry creatures that mostly hang out in the sun all day, eating fruit, getting laid, and exploring the universe through a quantum computer. It's good to have goals. And in the meanwhile, it's time to get to work. But first, Hamid Karzai may be back in a driver's seat in Afghanistan. So we're going to replay an old edition of Karzai Talk. Enjoy.
From Afghanistan Public Radio, where this year's tote bags are smaller.
From the abandoned American television truck in downtown Kabul, the city that always sleeps, I'm Mahmoud.
And I'm Hamid. We're Schmick and Schmuck, the Left Behind Brothers. Welcome to this edition of Karzai Talk. Today's program comes to you with the help of the Afghan Historical Society. In a couple of months, we're historists. So, my younger brother, after 20 years of complaining about Americans being here, we're about to start complaining about them not being here.
That tells you something about Afghans.
Mm-hmm.
Or about Americans.
After all that Yankee cash sloshing around here for so long, a person could be excused for wondering why we're not all rich.
Maybe because, unlike me, we don't all own a Toyota dealership right next to the presidential palace.
My brother is nothing if not a survivor.
Right, try my best.
The tundras he's selling now have audio systems that only get the Radio Taliban.
That's right, it was the loudest station anywhere.
Hello, you're on Karzai Talk.
Hello, I'm Pete. Long-time translator, first-time caller, maybe last-time caller.
Pete, I'm guessing that's not your real name?
Before I started helping the Americans, I was working in a Walmart call center. They gave me the name and taught me to chat a little bit about baseball.
Pete, I'm guessing you're not calling to discuss the upsurge in strikeouts?
No, Hamid, I'm one of the thousands of translators who may be left behind when the American Army turkeys out.
Don't you mean chickens out?
Yes, I'm sorry. I'm great with the accent, not so good with the vocabulary.
Well, I'm sure President Ghani has shared with you his plans for what happens when the Americans leave.
Oh, yeah. He's moving to his country place in Guam.
But what about these plans for all of you who helped the Americans so much while they were here?
Mm-hmm. We've been told they will need us as interpreters where they're now being reassigned.
Oh, where's that?
Anywhere else in the world.
Maybe we should have acted more civilized.
Meaning?
You know, colonize someplace else and make them speak our language.
Oh, so Pete, do you have a question for us, or did you just call to complain about your job?
No, I was wondering, with your connections, whether you know of a doctor who can rewire my brain to take out the English. If the Taliban detain me and start to enhance my interrogation, I really need to make sure I scream in Pasho.
Pete, if my younger brother knew people like that, he'd still be president.
Maybe an Iraqi interpreter who the Americans left behind in their war is listening on the internet and could call in with some tips.
Oh, that would be great.
Yeah. First, we have to get on the internet.
Thanks for the call.
Are we going to banter amusingly between calls?
I looked at the script. Better we should just take the next call. Hello, you're on Cars I Talk.
Hello, I'm Tawab, long-term pomegranate juice magnate, first-time caller.
Oh, Tawab, I love your juice. Unlike my brother, I couldn't care less if it lived up to its health claims.
Well, that case, of course, was settled long after I left office.
No hard feelings. We deducted the fine from our taxes.
That's what you call win-win.
So what can we do for you, Tawab?
Well, I was listening to your first caller, and it filled me with shame that we Afghans can't do more to help our own people who helped the Americans for 2 decades.
Well, some people think maybe the Americans should be helping them. They're the ones who got to be more easily understood.
Also, they're the ones with the planes.
Well, I ship a lot of pomegranates overseas.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to be trucked to the nearest port.
Well, that is a burden. But on the other hand, being a landlocked country means those trees of yours don't have to be protected against saltwater damage.
No, I have a lot of trucks leaving the country every day. Each one could probably have one interpreter concealed beneath the pomegranates.
You would smuggle out interpreters with your fruit?
If it were a vegetable, no, we wouldn't. But the pomegranate is the fruit of freedom. It just feels right.
And for the interpreters, it would feel better than being smuggled under a layer of watermelons.
Yes, that's true. Well, Tawab,
yes.
If Pete is still listening, mm-hmm. we'll have your contact information here at the abandoned television truck.
Thank you.
And thanks for the call.
We had help today from the Concord Coalition, making flying over Afghanistan ever faster.
Legal services for Cars I Talk from the law firm of Ketchum & Newcomb. I'm Hamid.
And I'm Mahmoud. Join us again next time for another edition of Cars I Talk. This is APR, Afghanistan Public Radio.
Articulate their message and together make a toast to the new schemes they're hatching, to the next regime they'll change, to the next nation they'll turn into a bombing range. They hyped it on the radio, newspapers and TV, the anarchists who come and destroy the city. The anarchists who come and the undercover cops, the old Chicago Red Squad and their psyops. It's the cops who bought the petrol, the cops who bought the cans, the cops who brought it home, the cops who made the plan so they got the terrorists they wanted. Now they're doing fine, they got the terrorists and they got the headlines. I wanna know who,
who?
I wanna know who,
who?
Who is the terrorist? Wanna know who,
who?
Wanna know who,
who?
Who? so many are each day. This is liberation, so they say. This is liberation, and in case you are unsure, the NSA will tell you if your thoughts might be impure. While the generals fly the Air Force all the way across the ocean, they'll build military bases, drop bombs of all description. But if you drive from Florida to the city of Chicago to pay a little visit to Mayor Rambo, watch out for the cops who bring home the gasoline, and your apartment becomes a crime scene. I wanna know who, wanna know who, who is the terrorist? Wanna know who, wanna know who, who is the terrorist? Meanwhile in Afghanistan, a village has been hit, a wedding party transformed into a pit, transformed into a graveyard for children, women, men, transformed into a graveyard for empire again, a place where terrorists are born with every drone attack, a graveyard for the Midwest boys never coming back, a graveyard for society, a graveyard for ideals, a place to bury all the hearts of anyone who feels them. At the meeting in Chicago, they'll talk of women's rights, they'll talk about the terrorists they've got within their sights, the terrorists abroad, the terrorists so near, the terrorists who grew up in a suburb around here. I wanna know who, wanna know who, who is a terrorist? Wanna know who, wanna know who, who is a terrorist? Meanwhile in Afghanistan, more protesters shot down by NATO troops who had to prove it's them who run this town, by NATO troops who have to show they are in control while it all comes crashing down in the countries they stole. NATO troops committing war crimes every day, ruling over nations in the old imperial way. The lying generals in Chicago with their satellites and tanks, taking orders from their bosses, the oil men and banks, taking orders from their bosses, looking suitably enraged at terror, foreign and domestic, real or staged, whether led on by informants or just pissed off by the war. The terrorists are meeting behind closed doors. I wanna know who, wanna know who, who is the terrorist? Wanna know who, wanna know who, who is the terrorist? Who, who is the terrorist? Wanna know who, wanna know who, who is the terrorist?
Chosen few. Perhaps there was a sign somewhere. records made by some whiny left-wing guy. Or maybe they would, but I'm just out of luck, because I don't have a label that can spend $1 million, because Sony and Clear Channel have taken over everything. And you've got to pay the piper if you want to make the piper sing. It's the king who tells the piper where to go. Why don't they play you on the radio? Why don't they play you on the radio? Why don't they play you on the radio? Why don't they play you on the radio?
When the world has gone crazy and it's all becoming clear, when they're gunning down our comrades, and it seems the end is near. As they're loading up the launchers for the tear gas grenades, we can take off our bandanas and kiss behind the barricades. When it's madness all around, and you can see this at a glance, we will sing and we will cry, we will laugh and we will dance. As they shout their marching orders beneath the helicopter blades, we shall seize the moment for a kiss behind the barricades. They will try to break our spirit, and at times they may succeed, but our love for the world is stronger than their greed. When the building is surrounded and hope begins to fade, in my final hour, a kiss behind the barricades. As the movement grows, there will be hills and bends, but at the center of the struggle are your lovers and your friends. And the more we hold each other up, the less we can be swayed. Here's to love and solidarity and a kiss behind the barricades.
All right. That was Kiss Behind the Barricades. Before that, we had Why Don't They Play You on the Radio? Before that, we had Meanwhile in Afghanistan, all those tunes from David Rovix. And we started that set off with Karzai Talk from Harry Shearer. So that's it for this week. Hope to see you next week. I've got a few more minutes for some of you, but for the rest of you, you have a good day. And in addition...